Good morning. Certainly is good to see everyone here. Appreciate the visitors with us and thankful for your presence and appreciate your encouragement to us. I'm going to continue on the part B. I did earlier in this month a part A of the vestibular system, and there's going to be a part C. So I was going to do A, B, and C in one lesson, so be thankful, you know, that I didn't decided not to do that, because it's a very large subject. And just so you'll know that this is a Bible subject, if you've never seen that word or are totally unfamiliar with it, then, we've got some scriptures in a moment. I just added part B to part A, so we're going to run through the slides. There were not a lot of them, just to review, because I know whenever you're introduced with something that you're not familiar with, it helps to kind of review it and look at it again. Let me see. There are systems throughout the universe, as far as we can tell. The larger telescopes we have, the more systems, galaxies, and order that we see in the universe. We have a solar system where our planets, you know, revolve around the sun. We have an ecosystem that has many symbiotic relationships within our Earth. We have many, many systems within our own bodies. Usually there's about 12 that are identified typically. We reviewed those last time. But here's a few scriptures that we'll introduce the lesson with. Psalm 139, 13 and 14. You formed my inward parts. You covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows very well. That word covered, incidentally, in many of your translations, will be the word knit together, knit or woven. The Hebrew word actually, the basic definition is entwined. That becomes very important in this lesson, because one of the things that the vestibular system the feature of it, the function of it, is that it is extremely entwined, woven, knit into our whole structure. And I think about when I'm learning about things like this, that how many generations of mankind through thousands of years have lived and died and had absolutely zero knowledge of the things that I'm going to be presenting to you today. We live in a very privileged time, and it ought to make us glorify the Lord even more and magnify His wondrous works. Psalm 105 says this, "Oh, give thanks to the Lord, call upon His name, make known His deeds among the peoples. Sing to Him, sing psalms to Him, talk of His wondrous works, glory in His holy name. Let the hearts of those rejoice who seek the Lord." So that's what I want to do this morning. I want to talk of His wondrous works. And here again, in case you didn't think the vestibular system was a Bible subject, the hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord has made them both. So we know now that the vestibular system, if you didn't know, relates to, among other things, the seeing eye and the hearing ear. Now, these are slides from last time, and I'm just going to take just a couple of minutes to review these rather quickly. I can't go over the whole lesson again. But what you're viewing there, which I no doubt most of you have seen illustrations of before, is the inner ear. And to the left there, you'll see a single cilia or hair cell, what's known as a hair cell, which are throughout the system of the inner ear. And what you have there in the, these are, you'll see the stereocilia and kinocilia here, which is the largest one. These relate to how the movement of the fluids inside the ear actually move and allow an influx of potassium. The endolymph fluid outside of this, or perilymph in the case of the utricle and saccule, is sodium rich. But when these the kinocilia or stereocilia open, it allows channels that go down into the cell and then depolarizes the cell, which goes into the neurotransmitters that basically send electrochemical signals to all parts of your body. Now, this is the size of one of these is about the size of a penny. If you could take it out and look at it, it'd be about the size of a penny. And here we have another illustration of, well, this is, we talked about the utricle and saccule last time. There are actually six organs inside of the inner ear. Most people think about only one of them. We think about the cochlea as being part of our hearing. And we see this part out here, you know, and we think, oh, the inner ear is for hearing. Well, yes, it is. We're not going to even be talking about the cochlea today. But there are two organs that have not even been known until relatively recently, and that is the utricle and saccule. The utricle and saccule relate to what's known as static equilibrium and dynamic equilibrium. What you see here in the top, and again, I'm going to try to go as fast as I can on this, but what all these little crystals here, these are calcium carbonate crystals that are embedded in the macula or the otolithic membrane here, this bluish area. And inside those are the cilia, the hair cells, the kinocilia and the stereocilia, that in turn, when you move, now again, what the utricles are, they're two like capsules or vestibules inside the ear. One of those is called the utricle, and the hair cells are all sticking up. You can remember it by the U. The two ends of the U are sticking up. So the utricle, our hair cells are sticking up. And when you move like this or like that or like that or like that, what's happening is these otoconia up here are actually heavier than the membrane, and they actually pull the membrane one way or another, which, again, creates an influx of potassium that runs down each one of these hair cells. And there's about 46,000 of these in the utricle and saccule, 46,000. So this is amazing stuff. And of course, here is the maculae of the utricle and the saccule, as you can see right there. I imagine, just like if you were like me, over the last couple of, if I hadn't started, I'll tell you what kind of started me onto this track, and I'll be very brief. When Gina and I and the family went up to see the Creation Museum up in Kentucky and the Ark Encounter, some of you have gone there as well, there was an anatomist there, and there's certain lectures that you can go see. And he didn't actually talk about this, but he did talk, but he actually had a real inner ear, which is a bony labyrinth that he showed everybody. It's a very small, little, tiny thing. And that, it just the fact that it was embedded in the skull and that the soft tissue was totally embedded in the entire body just intrigued me excessively, and so I wanted to know a lot more about this. So let me move on. Again, you see, that's another illustration of the utricle and saccule. We can't spend too much time on this. I just wanted to show these pictures in order to kind of jog your memory from the ones that were here last time. And there's an illustration of a more specific, you know, polarization or depolarization, as the case may be. There's an excitatory side and an inhibitory side we'll talk a little bit more about. So the otolithic organs, this is the where you see these arrows is actually the direction of the cilia. So this line in the middle here, you see that word there, striola? That's actually a line that creates the difference between the excitatory side, which contracts muscles, and the inhibitory side, which relaxes muscles. In order for to have these all of these things functioning, you have to have one side contracting and the other side relaxing. Otherwise, you'll get cramping and oppositions throughout your body, and you don't want that, of course. And these, again, I hope that everyone here appreciates the fact that thousands of years of humans have come and gone, lived and died without seeing things like this. This is one of the things I love about technology. There's a lot of bad things about it, but there's a lot of good things about it too if you use it well. These are actual pictures, photographs or images of the clusters of cilia. And this is amazing because they're so, so small, microscopic. And here you can actually see one of these are the stereocilia. And in this one here, you can actually see the kinocilia very well. This is the kinocilia right here. So when they beat towards the kinocilia, that opens up channels within these stereocilia, which are embedded in the neurotransmitters below here, which send out signals throughout your body. This is amazing stuff, folks. And I, you know, it's just, I feel like, you know, that we should be falling on our hands and knees, or our jaws should be dropping open. Something should be happening when we're considering the wondrous nature of our fearfully and wonderfully made bodies. The vestibular system, part B. So here we come into new material. We held off on the semicircular canals last time because I wanted to talk about the utricle and saccule, which hasn't even been known. Because they're so small, they haven't even been known very long in the medical community. Nowadays, you can find a lot about it on the internet. Man, I hope you that all of what I say today is going to be the most minimal, the most simplified kind of presentation as it relates to the complexity of the things that we're talking about today. The three semicircular canals, which we mentioned last time, but I didn't talk about specifically, are three tubes. They're actually bone. They're bone that is embedded. In fact, the whole vestibular labyrinth, which is what this is a model of the entire vestibular labyrinth. So this, and of course it's mirror symmetrical. It's on both sides equally except inverted. It's like a mirror, which is extremely improbable. You know, if I was going long about, you know, the contrast of creation and evolution, we could get a lot of mileage out of that one fact, that symmetry generally is extremely improbable. But we have these extremely complicated, intricately sculpted labyrinths, vestibular labyrinths inside our ear. And they're not only are they the bony labyrinths extremely specific and finely sculpted, but they also relate to the the three planes that are part of our spatial three-dimensional life here on Earth is what is typically known, if you were talking about mathematics, the XYZ axis, or if you were talking about the width, height, and depth is another way to look at it. Or if you were talking about a pilots like Gary over here, and there's others here that know about flight, they talk about pitch, roll, and yaw. All of these things relate to the same thing, which relates to how we sense, how our spatial senses that we detect or sense these things. So the proper names then of these three tubes here, these are the semicircular canals, is what we're talking about mainly today. So here's the anterior up here, semicircular canal, the posterior semicircular canal, and the lateral semicircular canal. And so each one of these relates to the XYZ axis that is a part of the three-dimensional world that we live in. So there isn't anything that you can do. It's just like the pitch, roll, and yaw is what an airplane can do in space while it's flying. It can pitch, roll, and yaw. And those are things that our bodies can do in the same general way. We can do the same thing. And so these anterior, posterior, and lateral canals, each canal then respectively detect and convey head movements like nodding up and down like you're saying yes, or shaking your head back and forth like you're saying no, or tilting your head left or right, or anything in between. So there is nothing that your head and body can do that the vestibular system cannot detect. Which is everything. You know, in other words, you can't do anything in space. If you're a gymnast, you know, and you're flipping and going on, there's nothing that your body can do that your vestibular system cannot detect. All of these inner ear organs are contained within the vestibular labyrinth, which again is an extremely intricately sculpted, hollow, bony labyrinth. That's the same on both sides. And each one of these canals is filled with a fluid called endolymph. It was perilymph, which is a little bit different in the utricle and saccule. So just think about, I mean, if we're not going to get into this, but I'll give you a website where if you want to drill down deeper into this, just think about the chemistry behind the mechanisms. The mechanisms are one thing, and the chemistry is an entirely different thing. This just came to my mind, but I happen to see many of you know who Richard Dawkins is. He's probably the premier spokesman for atheistic evolution today. He's written many books, one of them which is God Delusion. I listened to all 11 hours of that. You can pull it up on the internet. I listened to 11 hours of it, and I was actually amazed. I don't recommend you read it or listen to it, but I was amazed at how little, in fact, zero science there is in the book. The whole book is philosophy. It has no science in it. So if you're looking for science, don't get the book, The God Delusion, because there's no science in it. It's all philosophy. So, but anyway, I saw Richard Dawkins one time do this illustration where he was with a bunch of young people, like a class, and he was talking about the eye, and he talked about the eye as though it was completely separated from the body. And I know it was an illustration, but his knowledge of the eye was extremely primary and elementary compared to the complexity of it. And it just showed how, giving him the benefit of the doubt, perhaps he was simplifying things in order to try to convey something to the audience that he had. But I have found this to be the case over and over and over and over again, that evolutionists do not appreciate the complexity and symmetry of the body and how that all the parts are totally integrated and coordinated inside, woven together, knit together, intertwined together. You cannot pull out one thing, and you cannot add one thing at a time in the scenario of evolutionary time. You cannot add these things in there. They all have to be there from the beginning. That's one of the points of this study. So let me get back to the canals are filled with endolymph, and each canal, there's a swelling, an enlarged bulb called the ampulla, and you can see right here, this is the ampulla here's one, and here's one. See that little bit of swollen area? It's called the ampulla. And inside the ampulla is the crista ampullaris, which is the largest part of the crystal ampullaris is called the cupula. And the cupula relates kind of to the otolithic membrane in that it is a gelatinous membrane that is sets down on, let me see, I believe I've got a picture of that. Yes. Okay. So this gelatinous membrane is kind of cone-shaped mass that spans the diameter of the ampulla. And inside the cupula, there is an epithelium which contains about 7,000 hair cells. So here you see about, 16 of them. But there's actually about 7,000 of these. And again, this, as you can see, this semicircular canal here. So when the fluids move, when you move your head any way, any direction, these fluids are being sensed by these tiny kinocilia. Here you can see that word again, stereocilia, which again depolarizes, potassium runs down, depolarizes the cell, and goes out through the vestibular nerve to the vestibular nucleus and then on. We'll study that in a minute. So these hairs are inserted into bundles into the neurotransmitters, which then send electrochemical signals through very specified neuro pathways to specified muscles, which creates the yoked and coordinated. Now, this is what we're getting to today, is the fact that your eyes are yoked and coordinated. They don't, when you look left, for example, both eyes look left or right, in my case. You look left, you look down, you look up. Your eyes are coordinated. They're doing like this. They're not doing like this or like this, which would, make your eyes useless, of course, other than seeing light. So this is an extremely important feature of your eyes. These hair cells are inserted into bundles, and they coordinate and have a stabilizing feature. Some cameras that you can get and video cameras today have what they call a stabilizing visual field. They stabilize the visual field. Well, that's partly what your semicircular canals do. They stabilize your visual field. So again, the movement of your head causes the endolymph fluid inside your semicircular canals to deflect the gelatinous cupula, which in turn bends the hair cells, which opens up the stereocilia channels, which stretches the protein tip links. We didn't talk about that today, but we did talk about it last time. There are tip links which allows the potassium to influx, to depolarize the cell, which activates the action potential of the excitatory nerve on the positive side. So, as I said, there has to be an excitatory side in order for there to be, and an inhibitory side in order for there to be accurate muscle movement and contraction and relaxing of those muscles. So those are all part of the vestibular system. So the other side, inhibitory side, is called hyperpolarization. So, and all of these things are in an extremely precise movements. If they weren't extremely precise, then your eyes would not be able to focus, as clearly as they do. And I'm going to prove that to you in a moment regarding some of these things. I want to focus now on just one aspect of the job of the semicircular canal, which is to control the movement of your eyes. And few people are even aware of this, this simultaneously mirrored symmetrical movement of your eyes, that it's actually controlled by your inner ear. Which means, of course, that your eyes would be all but useless without your ears, the inner ear, which means that the systems are totally and completely integrated and interdependent, not independent. You can't take an eye out and it look back at you. You can't take an ear out and it's still here. It all is completely integrated. That's one of the, it's woven together. It's knit together. It is completely intertwined. You cannot take one thing out, like your heart or your lungs or your brain. It all has to be there initially from the beginning in order to function at all. And it's not just human bodies. It's all bodies. It's all life forms on Earth are like this. So any thought of adding these complex, integrated, symmetrical systems by random, purposeless mutations becomes an absurdity beyond any recognition of normal human intelligence and logic and reason. Before we go any further, at this point, I want to prove to you that your eyes and ears connected in ways that you probably have never realized. And this is an experiment. So you have to follow along closely. We're going to focus our eyes on something level. Like, let me see. Oh, that was another picture. So here's a level. This is the best one I could find. It's not very clear, but it does the job. It's a builder's level, let's say, you know, a carpenter's level. Now, what I want you to do, we'll do this together. Focus on the level, and then tilt your head to, let's say, the left. Okay, good. Now bring it back up straight, tilt it to the right. Good. And then bring it back up straight. Now, what did you notice about the level? What you should have noticed was that the level remained level. That the whole room didn't tilt when you tilted your head. That the room remained level. Your horizon line remained level. You see, these things are so seamlessly integrated into our bodies that we're using them every single day of our lives, and we're not even aware of it because they are so perfectly matched to all the other systems of our body. So when you tilt your head this way and that, what's happening? Well, it's very complicated what's happening. This is not a small thing. This is a big thing. Because if you did not have this feature, this function, you would not be able to stand up. You would not be able to walk. You would not be able to run. You would not be able to do any normal human functions of activity if you did not have the vestibular system in place. Well, if you thought that perhaps the reason this works is because the brain somehow calculates that you're moving your head, and therefore kind of like your eyes, you know, if you've studied your eyes before, you know that the the visual field is coming through your cornea and your lens, and it actually flips like that. And it flips over upside down on the back of your retina. And then there's a cascade of chemical reactions that go to the visual cortex. Well, your brain does flip over that image, but that's not what's happening here. It's different than that. So what the answer is, I want you to remember this term, this is important. The answer is the vestibulo-ocular reflex system. The vestibulo-ocular reflex system is a system within the system. It's a system of the vestibular labyrinth that is within the system of the vestibule, which relates to your eyes and all the muscles that are attached to your eyes to create this visual stabilizing function. So the vestibulo-ocular reflex system coordinates and yokes your two eyes together, producing eye movements in the direction opposite of your head movement, thus preserving a stable image, even when you're running or doing other activities. So just to demonstrate, if I was to look quickly this way, or quickly that way, or any other activity, your eyes, the part of the vestibular system is, it creates a lag behind so that your eyes, when if you turn right, your eyes actually turn left in order to preserve your field of vision. That's not all it does, but that's part of what it does. And one of the most amazing facts about, if you were in the medical community, you would call this the VOR system, V-O-R, vestibulo-ocular reflex system, called the VOR system, that it does is it does not depend on visual input to operate. In fact, it works in complete darkness. It works if your eyes are closed. Well, that's amazing. And let me go back to, for a moment, back to the self-leveling feature and how it is that your horizon remains level even if your head is tilted. If your eyes were square, if your irises and your pupils were square or triangular or octagon shaped, when you moved your head this way and that, you would immediately recognize what is happening. And what is happening is illustrated here, that your eyes, when you move them, they're actually rotating inside of the sockets like this. So when you tilt your head this way, it's not your brain that is reinterpreting it. Your eyes are actually rotating like this. Well, that's amazing. And in extremely precise ways. So that's the vestibulo-ocular reflex system. And it does all kinds of other things, but we're going to focus right now on the eyes, and we'll try not to be too long about it. But I want, at this stage, I want to prove to you that the self-leveling mechanism is not dependent on your eyes being open, which also proves that it's all connected internally and does not depend on visual signals. Now, this experiment will be like the last experiment with one exception. Some of your eyes are already closing, so I'm going to give you an opportunity to close your eyes. I can see everybody, by the way, up here. And I know, I've been the same way. You have a late night. Okay, I get it. Here's what we're going to do. And I know it seems silly, but this is very important for you to understand. What we're going to do next is let's go back to the level. And We're going to do the same thing again, but this time, what I would like for you to do, if you don't think it's too embarrassing, is to close your eyes. I'll demonstrate, okay? So if anybody's going to be embarrassed, it'll be me first. So here's what I want you to do. We'll do it all together in just a moment. Have your head straight. Close your eyes, like I'm closing my eyes. Then we're going to tilt it. It doesn't have to be a lot. Just tilt it, and then open your eyes while it's tilted and look at the level, okay? So on three, we're going to do this together. Okay, look at the level, upright, close your eyes, tilt to the left, and open your eyes to the level. All right, and now you can bring it back up. Now you can do it to the right if you want to. But what this proves is that the vestibulo-ocular reflex system is functioning whether or not your eyes are open. That's an amazing thing. In fact, another way to observe this is if you have a spouse or your children or something, and you have someone you can look at, have them close their eyes and start looking left and right and up and down. And what you'll notice is, if you've got good light, is that because of the bulge of the cornea, you can actually see underneath the eyelids your eyes moving. And what you'll recognize is they're moving together. So what does that mean? It means that the vestibulo-ocular reflex system is not dependent on your eyes being open. And it also means that they are completely and totally integrated with one another. You cannot take one out without the other. Which means that your ears are completely and totally integrated with your eyes, and neither one can function properly without the other. There are, incidentally, if you want to get into this deeper, there are a visual input that is actually corresponding with the vestibulo-ocular system, but that's another kind of another subject. So, for the last few minutes, I want to follow one set of neuropathways from the semicircular canals to just one set of muscles out of the six. And in part C, which will be a few weeks away, we'll talk more about the particular muscles that relate to this rotation thing. But we're going to use this chart here to help us. So let me catch you up one more time, just because I really want you to understand this. Because this is, I hope you realize, if you understand this, it makes the scraps of bones and the transitional forms and embryology and morphology and all this innumerable other scientific sounding things that evolutionists talk about, makes them absolutely meaningless. If you understand this, then this is like one of the best arguments. It is the conquering argument over any defined, evolution argument. This is better. And you can defeat an evolutionist, if you want to do that, or teach, let's say, with this one thing. When you tilted your head, as we did a moment ago, the movement of your head created pressure in the ampulla. We're just going over this one more time before we get to this chart. Created pressure in the ampulla that bent the cupula, stimulating the cilia, composed of the stereocilia and kinocilia, which then opened the protein links, which allowed potassium channels to enter the cell and depolarize it, which activated the action potential of the excitatory side, which is indicated here by the red, while at the same time, the same motion inhibits the synaptoproteins on the other side. Now, let's look at this chart here. So here, down here, you can see, here's the cochlea, Here's the semicircular canals, all right, on each side. Notice these arrows here, how one's going one direction, see that? And the other is going another direction. Now, what these larger arrows are showing is they're showing a turning of their this is a top view, sort of, you know, top-down view. So what they're showing is a head rotating one direction here. So what I want to finish up here with, from there, if we look at here where the rotation is happening, we just went over the mechanics of that. Then it comes, we'll follow the red side, which is the, see this little inhibition and excitation right here? So you've got the red part and the green part, or a blue-green part here. So let's follow the red part. When you're rotating your head like this, what's going to happen is the vestibular nerve is sending an electrochemical signal up to the vestibular nucleus, and from there to the abducens nucleus, where it is split, and you see one going straight, basically, on the same side, in the left side here, you see that one's going straight to this muscle, which is the lateral rectus or the medial rectus, and then the other one is split and is going over to the other side, which is the excitatory side, okay? So this is the excitatory side. So if you didn't have this, you would have cramps within your eyes and you wouldn't be able to move them properly. Well, these are controlling the muscles to the eyes here. And then on the same, we'll just follow this one on the inhibitory side, which relaxes the muscles rather than contracting it. So you come up here and then you split. This is the medial longitudinal fasciculus, that MLF there, medial longitudinal fasciculus. Wouldn't you like to say that a lot of times too? So that's what that is. So this is where it goes to the oculomotor nucleus, which goes to the inhibitory side, which relaxes this muscle, see, on both sides, and then you have the excitatory side on this. Now this is, I cannot tell you how simplified this is. If you go on the internet and if you go into medical journals and medical tutors, I'll give you the name of one in a moment that you can go much, much farther with this if you want to. And I hope you do want to. I hope this is a tease. I hope this is intriguing your interest in this. So there's, as we mentioned, there's about 7,000 hair cells per cupula. And so there's three cupulas, three semicircular canals, so that's three cupulas, so 7 times 3 is 21, that's 21,000. And then on the other side, you got 21,000 approximately, so that's 42,000. If you add to that the cilia in the utricle and sacula, which is about 46,000, and then tens of thousands inside the organ of Corte, which is inside the cochlea. You have so many sensory organs inside of your inner ear, which is about the size of a penny. We are marvelous creatures because our God has made us fearfully and wonderfully. We are fearfully and wonderfully woven together, knit together, entwined together. And I'm going to leave you here. I know I'm going long here. It seems like I always do. So, the hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord has made them both. That makes sense. I can understand that. That's logical. That's reasonable. That's rational. Any other explanation for this? Irrational, illogical, unreasonable. Yet they say, the Lord does not see, nor does the God of Jacob understand. Understand, you senseless among the people, and you fools. When will you be wise? he who planted the ear, shall he not hear? He who formed the eye, shall he not see? He who instructs the nation, shall he not correct? He who teaches man knowledge, the Lord knows the thoughts of man, that they are futile. Blessed is the man whom you instruct, O Lord, and teach out of your law. And that's the end of our slide presentation there. This is the most obvious top-down design that can be imagined. Evolutionists talk about bottom-up design. They believe that the design of all the intricate things in the world are bottom-up. And what they mean by that is they start small and increase over time, although that's never been observed. Nothing about evolution has ever been observed. And so this is the most obvious top-down design that can be imagined. Everything has to be in place from the beginning to work or to function at all. And, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth is still the most obviously correct explanation for all of the universe that there ever has been said. And it's the one that's true. So we'll leave you with that. One verse I want to note here. 2 Corinthians, this one's not on our slide. 2 Corinthians 10. For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God for pulling down strongholds. The Darwinism is a stronghold of the devil in our world today. It is so pervasive that everybody thinks that everybody believes it, which makes it like a mass hallucination. It is the most, it is a delusion that is so widespread that you have to know things very particularly in order to combat it, but it is a stronghold. But the next words of those verses says, casting down arguments, casting down arguments, and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. You know, this is the last Sunday of this year. We're about to enter into a new year. And if I was to, in times past, I think I and others have given lessons that kind of relate to New Year's resolutions and those kinds of things. If I was to give you a suggestion about a New Year's resolution for yourself, I would give you this suggestion. Become a Christian apologist. Become an expert on evidences. Because the longer all these voices out here that are so easily accessible to everybody, as long as they continue on, if Christians are not prepared to give an answer, all I can see is a greater dominance of false, evil, wicked theories and philosophies out there that are just confusing people. You have to know things. And this is one of the things that you ought to know. So if I had a New Year's resolution for you to consider, please consider becoming an apologist. That is someone who defends the truth of the Bible, the truth of the Word of God. So you can do that. I can do that. There's plenty of resources out there. Oh, I was going to give you this before we close. Some of what the information that I've gotten about the vestibular system is by a fellow who is on YouTube who, if you look up, if you want to write this down, if it's important to you, Ninja Nerd Science. He is a medical tutor, and he talks particularly about the neurological systems throughout the body. He has about 6 or 8 on just the vestibular system. They're about 30 minutes each. I've listened to all of them and took notes off of all of them, among many other things. So, but it's really, really great to understand how wonderful our God is, and he deserves the praise that we give him. He deserves our lives. If there's anyone here that we can help in any way to draw closer to the Lord, thank you for your patience and your attention to this lesson. And again, there will be a part C to this in a few weeks. I hope you look forward to that. And at this time, if there's anything that we can do to help you, if you don't want to come forward, if you want to talk to me afterward, that would be great too. So we'll stand at this time while together we sing this song of encouragement.